How are you? Fine? It's Friday. What are we doing here? Come on. Friday, 5:30. This is crazy. Yeah, where's the beer? Yeah. That would be way better. Well, I'm going to entertain you for the next 3 hours and a half. Just kidding. I have, unfortunately, you know, the last session of the 2 days of this great conference. And what I wanted to share now is basically a bit of overview of some of specifics of Windows Azure and in which direction we're actually thinking of going. By the way, my name is Luca Debeljak. I'm Windows Azure Lead for Central and Eastern Europe at Microsoft. So I kind of take care of business on Windows Azure in Central and Eastern Europe. And Ukraine is one of the countries that we cover. And you know what, we can also do the, like you have been listening for 2 days for different, you know, on different sessions around Windows Azure. So we can also do it in a Q&A way. Because I heard there were some questions and we can also address some of the questions. So maybe we can start with that as well. Because I heard that my colleague before got a question, what happens if the service is not available, right? If the service is down, what is then the payment back in that case, right? That was the question. So, fact number one, we are in the cloud, downtimes happen. Honestly, it happened to Amazon, it happened to us. Honestly, it happened to us a couple of weeks ago, so we know how problematic that is. But what Microsoft does, we put, our money where our mouth is. So we guarantee you money-wise for downtown. So what we did, we saw, okay, there was an issue on, we actually, what we did, it's a funny story, what we did is on the February 29th, that happens only every 4 years, as you know, we decided that this is the time to re-encrypt, to do security update with certificates inside of Windows Azure. We have really a strong security and we roll new certificates with 1 year validation every year, right? So we done that on 29th of February. And we kind of calculated that the expiry date is gonna be 29th of February next year, which doesn't exist. So we had an issue with the certificates. So all of a sudden, they were not valid anymore. And we rolled out that in inside of the data center. We had a downtime. It happens, we fixed it. It was, you know, stuff that was part of the data center. So our customers, of course, came back. And you have two ways of how you can handle it. So Microsoft said, we know which customers were affected, which data centers, every customer that was there. Next year, we give you a 35% discount on everything that you purchase. So that, you know, amount that was covered last month that you lost, you're going to get back. Plus, if you're a really big, big company, then usually when you go to the cloud, you can also take additional insurance on top of that. So you can go and ensure your service in the cloud. Like if you're in banking and stockbroker, something like that, you can assure that business in the cloud. You go to assurance, say running in the cloud, this is the, you know, potential risk rate, etc. So you can get additional assurance. We're running big companies like Coca-Cola Enterprises. They're running on Microsoft. They run their internal SharePoint, internal stuff on Microsoft. They run everything on Windows Azure regarding marketing. So we assure them, they have additional assurance besides what we give them so that they know if it goes down, they get their money back or they get some business, you know, what was failing with their business, they get something back. So it can be done also in the cloud, and it's part of the natural way of how we're going to deal with the cloud, because the error can happen here or it can happen in the cloud. For example, you're buying your internet connection from the local company. What if something happens with the local company? You still cannot get to the cloud, but it's not our fault. It's the local company fault. So, you know, you have different ways of how you have to mitigate that risk. But yes, it's cloud. It happens. So I started yesterday with this slide, and hopefully now after 2 days, you're fairly aware of what goes on in here, right? Right? Or you're just thinking, oh my God, 45 minutes of this guy, I'm going to die. I'll try to be interactive. I'll try to dance. I'll ask you questions. No, but I hope you got a certain sense of where we're going. You know, honestly, we're betting. As a Microsoft, we're betting on going to the cloud. And everything that we do today and every new product that's going to be released is going to have a cloud component. Of course, our marketing guys are usually so smart, they write that in a way nobody understands it. But honestly, you're going to hear something about cloud on your terms. That's going to be a marketing slogan, and it's going to be attached to every product we do. And it basically means if you want to put a portion of that into the cloud or connect it to the cloud, that's part of the product. And you're going to see that with most of the our products that are released in the next couple of months. So you covered, and you know that this is the part that you actually can do with Windows Azure. We're going to add functionalities to that quickly. One thing that's really nice with Windows Azure is that we release every functionality every 3 or every 6 months, because it's pretty easy for us to deploy everything in our data centers. We just, you know, we have new functionality, we say update data center, we can update the data center. And we can do that quickly. It's not like waiting for the next Windows version that takes, you know, 3 to 5 years or whatever. We just go forward. Right? So that's pretty nice. But it's pretty tough also for you as developers or IT pros, because you have to follow what's going on. So we tell you, you know, we give you community technology preview of some technology. So we say, here is the beta bits, play around, see if you like it, and then integrate it in your application. You always have to learn. That's gonna be the reality of cloud computing. It's going to just go really, really fast. So you kind of learned, you know, where we're going there and what the foundation for private cloud is, because there's also a lot of things that we take from the public cloud into the private cloud, into our environment. A lot of functionalities, a lot of, I would say, characteristics of the products go transferred. And you kind of learned what you're going to build with your platform. So now I'm going to go in some details in some of the building blocks that I presented yesterday and that you heard about already during these days. Problem now, you got details, many details. I saw just before in the presentation there were configuration files for web roles and worker roles, and I know it was deep down session on how you can actually deploy that and how the operating system works. But there's also some things that kind of show the future trend, and this is the topic of my session. So around database, what we learned and what you know is that actually we have SQL Azure as a service in the cloud that actually offers you a relational database. That database has some additional features. So question here, so that I don't repeat anybody else, have you heard about SQL Azure Federation? Yes or no? Okay, good. So we can move that quickly. But have you seen SQL Azure reporting in action? Okay, at least something you haven't seen. No, but the thing is, when you go to the cloud, you want to scale out, right? So even when you offer relational database, you want to make it scalable. So we offer you SQL Azure as a service. You start using it. We have some limitations, of course, because we are in a data center in the cloud. So your database cannot be infinite amount of space, cannot be big as much as you want. It has a certain limitation, and that limitation is 150 gigabytes. And there's a purely physical limitation to that, and you know what? We have calculated how our data centers are connected, and we, you know, with the optical fibers and all that stuff. And now if we want to keep up our SLA of keeping 3 instances of database for every database you do in our data center, because as you know, every data that you sent into our cloud is located in 3 different places. I told you about that. And it's the same for the SQL data. So when you create a database, we create 2 copies, one in the same data center and one in the data center in the region. Now, if it turns out that if you want to move more than 150 gigabytes in a short period of time, it becomes a problem to move more than that. So we have a physical limitation of how much a single database can be big. What is the size of the single database? And that's 150 gigabytes. But it doesn't mean that you know, you cannot grow further, and this is where SQL Federation comes in. And actually, it makes sense from two scenarios. One is basically because you can make database bigger, because Federation basically does database sharding. And that is a topic you can read a lot online. It's basically database partitioning in a certain way. So you do horizontal partitioning of your database. And then you can have plenty of databases that are all 150 gigabytes big. And that can go pretty far out. That's a lot of data, a lot of relational data. And the second part is also, if you have a database that's more than 150 gigabytes big, then usually your queries on the database might get slower, right? Because, you know, the size of the database and the tables becomes just too big, and you can optimize the indexes and all that stuff, but it just gets slower. So it makes sense to use partitioning. And I would say, if you're going to use SQL Azure, and if you're going to use databases, that's something you should consider. The nice part with that is also that we actually grow the price of the database in linear fashion. So for you, it doesn't matter if you're going to use one database that's 100 gigabytes or two databases that are 50. You're going to pay the same. You pay for the storage. Or three, four, 25. It's easier. So, you know, we basically just calculate how much you use and we charge you for that. So it's actually pretty easy for you to go in that direction. So now you know, so it's a database in the cloud, and what you're going to see in future is that we're going to add additional capabilities to this SQL Azure. Currently, if you look at SQL Server, that's on-premise, has a lot of functionalities that we don't support in SQL Azure. We cannot support yet because of the architecture. It's a different way of how we actually deploy the databases in the cloud. But we're working on moving some of them into the cloud. The first one that people usually tell us is reporting. And I'm going to talk about reporting later, because it's part of the business intelligence. Business intelligence is all the hype now. Everybody wants to have business intelligence in their application. So this is the first workload that we're moving forward with. So we have, you know, if you look at all our product portfolio, you can see that what we want to do is actually integrate all of the different data products. So SQL Server 2012, this is the old name, that was already released to manufacturing, so it's available. It's one portion of that. Then we have SQL Server Appliance, which is basically a SQL Server that you're going to put into, okay, I'm going to ignore this one, that you can put into your private cloud environment and deploy it as an appliance, and that has a great capability. Then we have SQL Azure, and then the top of our story is something that's called Windows Azure Marketplace, Data Market. Have you heard about that? No, some yes, no. So what we have realized when we were working with data is also that since we have this great cloud platform to build our applications, we can do interesting things. And one of them is actually to resell data. Now, this is a good concept. There are many providers of data out there that don't know how to push that data to end users or how to even monetize on that data. For example, Ukrainian Statistical Office. There's plenty of data there, believe me, right? Who knows what kind of data, how to access the data, how to query the data, but it might be useful for you. I don't know, you're a mobile operator, you might want to know, I don't know, the density of people who live in a certain area. Statistical Office probably has the data. So why wouldn't you use that, overlap it on a map, and have it visualized in your application? That would be pretty great. So what we do is help. We go to Statistical Office. They can sign up with Data Market, Windows Azure Data Market, and they can say, OK, we would like to expose this data. We tell them, great, this is the way how you do it. These are the protocols for exchange. This is how you have to structure your application to give us data. And what we will do is basically give you the service for others to connect to the data, and you will tell how much you want to charge for that data. So we will transactional service for you in the cloud. So today, if you go to Windows Azure Data Market, you can go that on windowsazure.com Data Market. NASA is up there, you know, all these different providers of data, and you can go there and you can go with a test account. I can show you later, and then you can browse through the data. You can use it in your application. It's a pretty, pretty interesting concept. The nice part with that is that it's all based on a standardized way of how to exchange data. And this is another acronym for you, OData. Have you heard about that? Yes, OData. So we exchange it like that. And all of these things work together. This is our future. We believe that this should be one story of how we can provide you the platform for the data, and then you can use that all across of your devices. And these are the capabilities, let's say, for business intelligence. I said this is the first one that we want to go after. And you know, if you look at it, it can be either on-premise or it can be in the cloud. Oops, I was a bit quick. Okay, my slide doesn't work properly. But it can be either, the key point is that it can be either, any of this one can be either on-premise or in the cloud. So for example, data source, you know, can be SQL Server, SQL Azure, any other data source you have. Data platform services can be SQL Server, I guess, or SQL Azure, whatever you use, and then applications are, you know, Excel, Office 365, depending of if you have a client in the cloud or on-premise. So first one that I want to talk about was SQL Azure Reporting. It's in a kind of preview mode, which basically means you can use it. If you have your Windows Azure account, you can use it. We don't charge for it yet, because we're still in kind of preview mode. Check it out, try it out. If it works for you, that's great. If you have ever used SQL reporting services on-premise, the thing is totally the same. You don't have to change anything. The only thing that I'm going to change and I'm going to show you is basically just the connection string to my server where I push my reports to. So it's really straightforward and it's really easy to use that in your application. So now think about it. Currently, let's say you're doing, let's say a CRM system for your customer that has many offices around Ukraine and you have to do reporting. So you do some kind of report that everybody wants to see in the locations. What you have to currently deploy SQL Server, SQL Reporting, have a web server where you're going to locate that one, open it up to firewall, and do all the permissions on how to put the web server in demilitarized zone and all that stuff. It's pretty a lot of work. So they could get to see the report. Now, easier way is now to just publish the report in the cloud and give access to everybody through Windows Azure and handle everything on Windows Azure because the platform is there. And this is the concept that you have, you know, quickly push the reports to the cloud and manage access there. Okay, so here is the slide that I was looking for before. So we can change either to SQL Server, SQL Azure, and different clients. So now let's look at some environments where we can actually build this. You're accustomed to this one now. You probably saw how you can manage database inside of your web environment, right? Yeah, you saw that one. So we're not going to go. The similar way is SQL reporting. So SQL reporting, you go to your subscription and you say create new. And when I say create new, what happens is a new reporting server is created for me. So I just have a reporting server that's on this link. I assign it the username and all my reports and everything already there. That's it. Now I have my own report server. And I have username and password to use it. So the next step is, of course, no, this is just a service for reporting. There's no database there. This is just service for reporting. Yes. One second. We're going to show. Yes. One second. So we detach that. So database is a service and reporting is a service. Okay. Yeah. So now what I'm going to do is say I want to create a new report server. And I'm going to say I want a new connection, and I'm going to say here SQL Azure, and I'm going to look, it can be my local SQL, it can be whatever you want to have. I'm going to just look what the name of my database is quickly. So this is my database, I'll copy the name. So we're going to say go SQL Azure, my database. Yes. Yes. For SQL Azure or SQL Server, it's the same thing, except for the name of the database is different. One is located in the cloud and one is local. I have here all my databases. I'm going to say AdventureWorks. Next, I'm going to build a query. Now, this one is tough because I have to figure out what we want to look at. But let's say quickly, I don't know, maybe a product, maybe some product model, I don't know, product. let's say, just to see if it works, it's going to be fine. We got the table, which we're going to do a tabular report. Let's say product name is up there. List price can be here. Just something, just so that you get the feeling. Next, I say next, this color, next. And here, when I say report server, what I can do is now say that my report server is actually a different one. My report server is this. So I'm going to copy that. I'm going to put it in my report server, next, finish. The same thing. Now, I don't know what this will even show up, but when we say deploy, now I'm going to, if I put everything OK, now it's going to go to my report server in the cloud. And in a second, I'm going to see a pop-up saying, can you put in your credentials to go to that report server? And I can say, sure. I have the same credentials for that one. And I've deployed to the cloud. Now, when I run that report in the cloud, it's going to actually go to my SQL Azure database that's also in the cloud and produce that report. It can go to any database anywhere. So you see, it's just the service. And the database you have, and data you have somewhere else, wherever you want. The easiest, of course, is to have it in the cloud as well, but you can have it on-premise, wherever you want. It's just the service that actually renders the report. So now we can go to that service. I can just go, let's go to that service. And you're going to see a familiar experience. Oops, yeah, you have to know your password. That helps. I was right, so hopefully I'm going to be right. Okay, so you see, this is the ugly part of a report server. But this is some reports I created before. You get the same experience. It's like having SQL reporting, but now I'm running it on a server that's in Western Europe, in Dublin somewhere. It pulls up some data from my database. I can drill down into data. I can get some stuff out of it. 1, 2, 3, it's pretty simple, right? If I configure it like that. Now not, because you saw my password, but I could configure this website to be available for anyone, yes. If you want, do you want that? If you want, yes, why not, right? I wouldn't, but yes, you can, sure. From on-premise, you mean? Or from where? Okay, yeah. This is something that's going to be worked on, because currently, as you saw for SQL, we don't support enterprise credentials yet. So you always have to use SQL Server login, and here you need to use special login. What you could do is connect. Now, it would be a lot of work today to do that, to say at least. Okay, so we're working on that to make that more seamless. Currently, it's pretty tough. Currently, to do single sign-off is pretty tough, because you would have to somehow go through access control service that we have in the cloud, the one that does identity, and you would have to synchronize that one with your local Active Directory, and that local Active Directory would need to have Federation Services 2.0 to actually be able to connect there. So we've done some projects, and it becomes quite heavy. So we're getting there. And this is one of the steps, actually, yes, where we're going to invest. And you will soon see big progress in that front. OK, so data is basically just how we transmit the data. This is the website where you can check it out, how the standard looks like. And this is something, again, that we integrate in all of our products. So all data is part of SharePoint. You can expose everything in SharePoint in all data. You can expose natively out of SQL. SQL Azure also gives you a capability to expose everything natively in all data, if that is the way how you want. It's a restful way of how you look at your data in the cloud. The next thing that's interesting is SQL Azure Data Sync. Have you seen demos of that? Yes, all of you? Okay, so we basically what we've done here is giving you the option to synchronize between databases, different databases in the cloud or in different data centers, or to synchronize with your data database that's on-premise. Now, one question that many people ask is, if I have my SQL Azure database, how can I do backup? And first question I have is, why do you need to do backup, right? Honestly, why do you need to do backup of that data? Because usually what they say is, okay, the only reason that it could be is that you don't need the data anymore, and you're just paying for storage, so you want to do backup, or backup, that makes sense, okay? If you do need the data, then you don't want to do the backup because it's live and we keep it alive in three different instances of database, so you keep it there. But it's SQL Server. So you can go there and you can just say create database as copy of, a simple SQL statement that does a copy snapshot of a database and puts it in another place. You can say give me and create copy in another part of the data center and we create that for you, or in your own SQL Server if you want. It's not working yet. It's going to work soon. I cannot say. It's going to work soon. Yeah, that's the trick that I wanted to say. It costs money to actually put it down because that's the charge that we have. If you give data out of the data center, that's the transaction cost you pay. Incoming traffic doesn't cost anything, outgoing costs. So that's the trick that it is. We're working on that one, and probably in which direction we have to think is, if you do create a backup, the smart thinking would be to put it on Windows Azure Storage, right? Because then you don't need to move it all back to your environment. And you have it there, triplicated copies, and it's really cheap because that storage is cheap, right? So this is probably one thinking of you know, create backup and put it there. And you could tweak it today. I could go, probably, you know, we could tweak it somehow, but it wouldn't be a nice way. So you're going to see soon a way of how to do that. You're going to soon see a way of some progress there. So you heard about SQL Azure Data Sync. I'm not going to show you then this one. The database, basically what I was talking about is, you know, we do three replicas out of the box for you. They're located, as I said, in the same region. High availability redundancy is out of the box, so you don't have to worry about that. We talked about SQL Azure Federation, and this is something that I would, as I said, encourage you to go after because it's the most efficient way of how we scale out the database. So, concept I was explaining, so instead of having one big database, you have 20 smaller ones, and of course then the queries go according to the partition to that database. So every database is has less traffic than one in the first case. So SQL Azure Federation, probably you saw it. What really I love about this online tool is actually the way of how you can manage databases. So it's so we go again. Okay. You've seen all that, right? The way how you have everything, the overview of everything. You can look at different databases. You can look at federations that are associated with those databases. So I'm going to just click here and it opens up. So you can create a federation and you say, you know, what is going to be the way of how I'm going to split this database. So you quickly say, this is the partitioning key that I want to use. So when to split the database. So for example, in first database, I have a product ID, for example, and in first database, there's going to be only products with IDs less than 10 million. Second one is 10 million to 20 million and so on and so on. However you want to split it. The nice part, really nice part here is that everything is done on the fly. So you don't need to do anything. We just create additional databases for you when needed. And your database is all the time still available there for you. Okay. That's good. You like that. Okay. And of course, the tooling is there, so you can actually use it in the cloud as well, or you can use any thing that you have on your premise environment. One thing that will get a lot of attention now is something that's called SQL Server Data Tools, and this is these are artisanal tools that are actually integrated into Visual Studio. And with SQL Server Denali, we had the first release of these tools. Not all functionality is there yet, but it's going to come. There's going to be additional release with the new Visual Studio. There's going to be, which is coming, as you know probably, there's going to be additional release with new release of SQL Azure. So these tools will get updated. So this is the idea of where we want to go. And we give you some of this functionality. So you can do Explorer, you can do database publishing, you can create schema first in your environment in Visual Studio, and then publish the schema to SQL Azure. We support schema publishing now, which is great, because if you start working with on your project and you create the schema first before you actually populate the database, this is the way how you want to do. There's integrations with ADO.NET Entity Framework, or Entity Framework version 4, which is currently available. You probably use that if you're .NET programmers, right? So there's going to be integration with that one, how you can connect that to your database. Something that's going to come, and yesterday we were just looking quick with some colleagues, is schema comparison. They moved that out. It doesn't work yet, but it will work so that you will be able to compare schema on SQL Azure and locally. Which is also pretty much, if you do some changes on a local database and you want to see what is the difference of schema, you will be able to do that. As you know, we already support schema comparison on-premise, but you know the only thing is to move it to the cloud. So there's a lot of things that are going to be new, and this product will change pretty rapidly. You install it as a, you know, if you have Visual Studio, you just download it and you install it and you get all the templates in there. And it's pretty good for some of the things. It's amazing. You can you know also do some database testing and stuff like that. So it's pretty. I would really encourage you to go after that. And one thing that I said, entity data model. If you create it, it's going to be synchronized. So you can look at SQL Azure and say create entity model, and we look at the SQL Azure and create the entity model for you, and then you start using that in your code, which is pretty neat. This is the way how we want to program. We don't want to write direct queries all the time. We write in object-oriented world. So if you install it in Visual Studio, it's not going to be something new. It's going to be basically just a couple of projects that you get. You're going to have updated project for SQL Server that you can use, and you're going to get this step for analysis services project. So it's also a set of tools for SQL Server on-premise. So we're bridging the gap. Actually, you know, we want developers not to have to have a distinctive way of thinking, okay, I'm going to program for the cloud, this is totally something different I use, or I'm programming for SQL Server, this is something different I use. Same tool, different templates, you just start using it. And this is what you get out of the box, some analysis services, tabular stuff, integration services, and all the things. And you can do everything inside of your Visual Studio. I would recommend you, if you're working with data, this is some way to actually install. And then this is the part that I like the most. This is the, I don't know if you've seen this, is SQL Azure Labs. Okay, at least nobody's nodding now. Yes, I got one that nobody saw yet. So this is the website where you go to see what our creative minds are thinking, because we have many projects that start up in Microsoft, and they're trying to see what will be great for SQL Azure in the future. And here you can sign up for some of these things. So let me show you how this looks and what we can actually use there. So I'm going to go to, okay, let me close some of these windows. Leave this page. Let's go. SQL Azure Labs, pretty straightforward name, sqlazurelabs.com. And you come to all of the new services. The nice part is also you can sign up for these services. They are in something which is called Community Technology Preview, CTP. So you can start using them, playing around with them, and then after a while we will integrate them into the main product. So here, you know, for example, one that's really interesting is Trust Services. Trust Services basically give you, if you look at CTP, the way of how you specify a certificate and use it then automatically to encode every data that you put into the cloud. So it's a service to encrypt everything that you put into the cloud, which is something that's you know, either you have to do it today with the code, you have to write it. Here it's going to be a service that's reliable for you. You just specify which encryption certificates or whatever your encryption way is, and it's going to encrypt all the traffic to the cloud. Interesting concept. Then there's something which is called cloud numerics. And here it's basically, well, this is a lab. It's a set of tools that you can use for numerical analysis of your data. Mostly they says for scientists. Then it's something that's called Microsoft Codename Data Explorer. I installed this one as well. You get a client. This one is actually pretty interesting because what it gives you is a way of how to mesh up data together. I played around with it. It's not too intuitive, at least not for me, but maybe for some of you it will be more intuitive. But it's, you know, you have different data sources and you can connect these data sources together and then maybe you see some patterns that you otherwise wouldn't. It's basically how you would see data patterns in a different way or data connections. So it's a mashup of different data sources. So for example, you know, we can create, okay, let's do a new mashup let's do a new mashup so that you see, you get the feeling of how it works. So let's say new mashup, and mashup tells you it's basically connecting different data sources. So we can have, you know, SQL databases on-premise in the cloud, wherever, web content, data feed, marketplace, SharePoint, because it exposes all data. And I can bring all that together, link it, find some relationships, and then see what is going on. Because it's so many data sources, I can see it in a nice way. So here, for example, if we go for our SQL server, I'll just copy this one. Okay, we go down. It's gonna, you see, my username and password is there. So now it's connecting, and I'm going to be able to drill down into my, let's say, database. I can go to, I don't know, some data about the person. I could say, I just want to pull out last name because I'm going to connect last name to something else. Last name is interesting to me. So you basically do click, and then the isolates only the data of the last names for you. So now if I go to last name, you see, it did just that one, or it can do the whole column, or it can do whatever you want. And I can pull that data out. So let's try this. I think I do it like this, yes, the whole column. So I have now, no, I did it before somehow. This is, it's a bit not intuitive, that's the problem. We're still trying. But the key point that I'm trying to say here is, you know, a different approach of how I would integrate data, because then I would add data from, I don't know, I would say, let's see all the last names and compare it to something that I get from Windows Azure Marketplace. Let's say, I don't know, data about maps or something. And then you can look at that. Maybe there's some correlation or some other data that comes from your database. And then you have some other inputs that makes you work on the data to get some insights. Yes. Good question. It's CTP. Maybe. It's, as I said, this is what you get as installed and they give you access to service. I played around only a while. I just said I want to show you what the concept is. So I don't know all the details. But if you go to this website, it's written there. So I would encourage you, go SQL Azure Labs and try working it up. I tried to find a good example today of how the data work. I couldn't find one. So because it's just CTP. So I cannot show you something that's really great in the sense, but maybe you get an idea of how you can use that. Data Hub is another one, is basically where you create Data Hub in the cloud to synchronize all of your data. Data Transfer, that one is funny one. So this one is basically somebody realized that it might be funny to have an easy way of how I can store files into the cloud. And I can store files in SQL Azure or I can store them in storage. But usually that's kind of tough, because if you want to store it in Windows Azure Storage, what you get is a RESTful API, and you have to write your data or use some software to store it. So here they're trying to do is easy transfer of your data in seconds to the cloud. So for example, to Windows Azure Blob, it just gives you, you know, overview of how to store the data. You just say where you want to store it, like I did before, and then you have your data listed in your blobs or whatever. Here I uploaded before, for example, a file in the storage, and this is a web application that actually gives you the manipulation around that. So you quickly upload data, you get it down, you can manage the access to the data and all that stuff, and then when I click, I get immediately access to the file. Although the file is stored in Windows Azure Storage, here it's exposed in a nice web application. So this is gonna be probably, I would consider this might be a template in Visual Studio of how you create such a website, maybe, or something like that. It will probably go in that direction. Social analytics, this one is also interesting. Somebody came up with an idea that many times, now I have to figure out how I have the access to this one. They figure out that it might be good if you look at all the social analytics data and analyze it together somehow to see what the patterns are. There are some tools out there that do that in a similar way. They look around all the Twitter and whatever and give you reports. This one is a bit different because it goes in live mode. So let me just see was it Bill Gates? Yes. Because it gives you, when you sign up, it gives you two things to actually look at. It's two data sets. One is Bill Gates and one is Windows 8. Just testing website. So what I've done, it's a Silverlight application that enables me, I already did some stuff. So I said, okay, I'm looking for everything that Gates in malaria in the last so many days. And it goes around and it gets all the different resources. And then this is on news threads. Then it's on Facebook. It gets everything that was associated with the same thing. And then we have Bill Gates in education. Okay, let you just move there. So it's loading that data. And then from Twitter, the same thing. And it's on I think I also created analysis. So basically you can say, now it's gonna actually come up. Then you can do analysis to see in a graphical representation how the data was used. If there was more tweeting, what was happening then? And you can kind of analyze all of that. So you can see, I can go here and say, I can see conversations, Gawker.com, they said, okay, let's see what happened at that day, and I can drill into that day and what was going on. Interesting way of how you move through social networks to see what people are actually talking about, right? So this is one of the projects that they're doing. It's powered by the cloud, we have the capacity, and we're gonna actually see how it's gonna be at the end, how it's gonna play out. But we have some customers already who are interesting of using this for some of their projects. So there is a need to actually go after this portion. Then there are some additional things that are interesting. Compatibility assessment is really great because it basically you create your database package, you put it to this service and it tells you if it's gonna be compatible and what you have to change to put it on SQL Azure. And the last one that I like is the security services. This one is basically a service that will scan your database in the cloud and tell you what might be the issue with your database. So quickly to show you how it works, currently in this preview. So we go after our database. So I'm gonna say this is my database. I give him the access that I have. Okay, I agree. Next. Then it says complete server, individual database. I'm gonna just say I'm gonna scan this one. Then how you want the output to browser or to your storage account, let's say to browser. Now the service go to my database with my credentials. It looks at the database, all the structure to give me a report. And the report will say, you know, we found some security issues that you might fix. And this is what we looked at and this is the statistics. It took a couple of, 20 seconds before or something. So hopefully now it's not gonna take longer. Because I want to show the report, but if it doesn't come up in 5 seconds or so, we can look at it a bit later.
Can you mention the rules of this stuff?
This is all preview, you know? So currently, it's what you see is what you get. This is what you get. But it's an idea of where we're going. So when I got access, I'm like, as new as you are here, I got access, I signed up like you can sign up tomorrow, and I started looking at the stuff. I couldn't find anything to change anything. This is just how it was, and you know, this is how the service was working. And for example, for my database, which is probably just a couple of data, found one bug or one security issue that only database owner can access the database, and it tells me it's probably a design issue. You didn't design your database properly. And then it tells you the attack surface, you know, how many logins you have, databases, users, roles, et cetera, et cetera. So it gives you the attack surface of your database. That's a pretty nice thing at the end, you know, if it will be able to extend the service and everything when it goes live. But it's nice to have an overview to see, you know, what is the attack surface of your SQL Azure database, for example, so that you know if you did something wrong or too many users or whatever. As I said, unfortunately, this is not a product yet. You cannot tweak it. You don't get bits. You just get invited. You get a code of how to access it, and then they inform you when they're doing something new with the product. It's basically, you know, you're interested, and then you get email, oh, we did something new, and you can try it out. So this is what I just wanted to show you because it's fun to play with that. Two things that are also where we're going in the future. I don't know if you, did anybody have a topic on HPC and big data? You had a topic on that. Yes. Sorry, about? HPC. Ah, okay. Ah, okay. Good. That's great. There are, you know, not many people who do that. But if you look at, if currently you want to do high performance computing, which basically means probably parallel processing, distributed processing, all that stuff, you could do that with something that was called Windows Server Compute Cluster Edition. And then you could extend it to SQL Azure, so that SQL Azure workloads were also part of that cluster to do the computation. That's one way of doing it, and you can still deploy that way if you want. So you know, we support something that's called HPC Scheduler, where you actually you create your application, you deploy it across Windows Azure, and it does that computational parallel computation. MPI is the standard for communication if you do such applications, and it's pretty well. You know, many customers go after this one. This is like one way of how to do applications. What we said is, you know, there's also another open source framework that's really good in the sense of how to do parallel data processing, and that's called Hadoop. I don't know if it's Apache Hadoop is a project. And it actually said, okay, we're going to embrace that as our native way of how we do distributed computing on top of Azure. So if you have any Hadoop project, if you've done that, you're going to be able to use it easily on top of Windows Azure. Now, if you're not in this space, this might be now, okay, I don't need that, whatever. But soon if you come into big data processing, if you're going to work on large quantities of data, this will become really interesting. If somebody wants to try that, Hadoop on Azure.com is the website. You can sign up. You get the SDK. We tell you how to deploy it on Azure, and you can start playing around with it. Pretty interesting stuff. And the additional thing that I told you is that all of our products are working together. So SQL Server 2012, when you look at SQL Server, what they present there as core functionality, is basically SQL Azure Federation. It's basically the same engine that's going to drive the both of the things. Snapshot backups from on-premises into the Windows Azure platform. So this is a scenario that actually is pretty interesting to many of our customers. To do backup of your data in the cloud, you can do that pretty easily, right? And it's way cheaper, they realize, than to do a proper backup on-premise with two locations that are, you know, wide apart, et cetera, et cetera. So they look at the cost of how much to pay for the storage in the cloud or the cost to actually do a proper backup. It's quickly seen that the cloud makes sense. Okay, so that was around data. Then just quickly around what we were talking with service bus integration, we talked about what that is. You also saw some details in one of the sessions. Where we're going here further is to expose service bus for e-enterprise application integration, of course, and something that's known especially for companies that do a lot of they exchange a lot of documents. There's a standard EDI that used for that data exchange, and we're going to enable it on top of service bus. So out of the box, now you can download SDK to configure your service bus to actually do it in EDI manner. And that's pretty good, and many companies probably use this standard to exchange the documents, right? So if you're going to look in that, it's SDK, you download and you configure your, you basically just configure your service bus. And then the last part is Windows Azure Connect and Windows Azure Traffic Manager. Did you see samples of those two? No, okay. So what do they do? I'm gonna quickly describe what they actually do. The first one, Connect, enables you to do a VPN connection from your on-premise environment to the cloud. So you can enlist your roles in the cloud into your VPN network. So and you can also configure your Active Directory in such a way that the computers in the cloud are then seen as the computers in your local network. And that's pretty easy. It's pretty straightforward and easy to do. What you have to do is configure first the role in the cloud. You then install the some software. You get a special token to connect to that role. And then you install a client on premise on the machine that you want to connect to the cloud or on Active Directory domain server so that you connected the whole domain to the cloud. And then it just works on IP level, pretty easy. You ping the server, you get to the server. The only thing that people or users usually have to think about is that even these servers are now seen as part of your virtual network, they're still in the cloud. So they might not be there. They might be there, they might not be there, because this is, you know, or the latency to get to them might be a bit longer than to the local ones. So you have to think properly how you want to do your architecture. But as I said, if you properly structure your application, it shouldn't be a problem. Like the EasyJet example I talked about yesterday, they do it in such a way. They do the VPN with the cloud application to their own environment where they have the data. The second one, which is pretty interesting, is Windows Azure Traffic Manager. And this one helps you in scenarios where you have a lot of traffic on your, let's say on your website, and you have website deployed in different data centers, for example. So now, if you have users from Japan, you don't want them to go and access the US data center because the latency will be wrong. So you want them to go and use the local data center in APAC, similar for Europe or US. This is like a simple scenario. So currently, how would you do that currently? Currently, you would have to implement logic on the first website to see where the user is from and then route him to the proper endpoint. Voila, and this is what Windows Azure Traffic Manager actually gives you. So we can look at a simple scenario around that. It's actually already there when you have Windows Azure account. It's part of the networking. So one thing that you have is virtual network, and here you have all the functionality that are defined for your connectivity, to say at least. So Windows Azure Connect, here I could define groups to connect computers together. I install local endpoint, like I told you before, get activation token that I have to put in my Visual Studio. So first, you know, I just create my role, and then I have to define, I'm going to just open here a quick project to give you a clear view. Okay, no, this is not the right project. This one will be probably okay. So with any Windows Azure role, you can just say virtual network, activate Windows Azure Connect, and then it tells you, you know, you have get the activation token. So I need this activation token. I copy it in here. I say activate Windows Azure Connect. I deploy my role, and then my role can be part of this virtual network. And it will show up if I deploy it. I haven't deployed it in this way, but it would show up in the list here. And then I can add my own laptops or computers with a local endpoint that I install. Pretty straightforward, really, a couple of steps and you're done. For the traffic manager, you actually define policies. You define policies to actually go after, to actually do the kind of logical load balancing. So what I've configured here, for example, I said I'm going to have a load balancing and it's going to work on performance. It can work on three scenarios currently. So it detects your website and sees which one is the most responsive of the website that you put in the list. And then it routes the traffic to that one. Failover basically looks at which one is alive and which one is dead. So you just route to the service that's actually alive. And round robin does a certain way of randomly distributing load to all of the websites you put in the list. And then basically you just say which are the services actually you would like to go after. So these are my two web rows that I have running, and I put them both into the traffic manager. I told them what would be the relative patent file name for service to check if you're alive, so if your website is alive. So it checks every 30 seconds. It will check if the website is alive. If not, it will say it's degrading, and then gives you the basically URL where you would access your service at. So now if I go to my Azure Service 12.trafficmanager.net, it will check my services, it will give me one of the URLs of the services, and I'm going to be redirected to that service. From there on, I'm communicating directly to the service. Traffic manager goes away, just gives me the first token, says this one's alive, go there. So it works in such a manner. So basically, if we have patience, you know, I could go here and say I'm going to copy this one. And you know, we go to one application. It's selected out of two. It's selected now the second hosted service because I created one blue, one red, just to have that fun out of it. So now, actually, if I would go to my hosted services and I would stop the second one, and I would then I have to just wait. I'm going to just stop. Now we have to wait for two things. We have to wait for service to stop. We have to wait 30 seconds for traffic manager to determine that it stopped. So it's going to say it's failed. And I probably have cache in my browser that I didn't change. So my browser now, if I go to traffic manager, will still go to the same URL that it got the response from. So after a while, probably, I'll get the blue one here. Let me see. Management portal. But you get the idea of where this is going. So after 30 seconds, this one should actually show me that. So it's three, okay, two seconds to the next refresh. So at certain moment, it still failed, and then it will route the traffic to the second one. So okay, well, it didn't stop yet. So the hosted service is still stopping. So, but anyway, we can check later on. You're going to see it's failed, and if we route to the same website, it's going to be blue, the blue website. But you get the idea of how this is actually working. Okay, so a couple of things at the end I would like to tell you what we're thinking about. One is also Microsoft Endpoint Protection for Windows Azure. Some people said they would like to have their web roles or worker roles more protected because they're exposed to the internet. So you can install this one. This is a way of how you can install Endpoint Protection on your virtual role that's running on top of Azure. You probably saw this one, Team Foundation Preview. This is also running on top of Windows Azure. It's really a nice way of how you can use that service. And then additional thing that I wanted to say is, you know, where we're going in terms of management, because today management on Windows Azure is available. It's kind of not that simple. You have to know how to set it up. But what we're going forward is Microsoft System Center. There's a new release of System Center called 2012. Of course, we're really creative. Everything is 2012. And that one has a special portion that's called App Controller. Have you ever heard of that one? System Center App Controller. Yeah, you have. Okay. So that one will be actually enabled to go, okay, this is the old one, to enable you to manage both on-premise environment and cloud environment. So it will understand Windows Azure, so it will look something like that. You're going to have a list of your online deployments and a list of your on-premise servers running or virtual machines running. And the really nice part is, I just have a couple of screenshots here, the really nice part is that it's going to deploy the applications in the same way on both environments. So you're gonna create an application bundle package. And it's gonna system center. That is gonna you when you start managing these environments, because especially if they're spreading from premise on premise into the cloud. Okay, so quickly I told you where we're headed and what are some of the thinkings. You can see that we're working on three core fronts, and I would say in the next 3 to 6 months you're going to see many new things. One way we're trying to make it as easy as possible to navigate on to Windows Azure, to use anything inside of your Visual Studio or any tools that we create. Second one, we want to make it open and flexible. So as you saw, you know, we support all the languages that are used there. We support Hadoop, for example, which is an open source project. So we're really trying to be open and flexible. And third part, we want to get that big stuff, big functionality there for you. So SQL Azure, you know, more performance, more scalability, schema copying we were talking about, you know, database backup, stuff like that we're gonna add. Big data, as I said, you know, how to actually tackle big data. And one really important one, system center integration, so that you can manage these environments. Because when we go to the cloud, the environments are becoming more and more complex. With that, how do I get started? For this one, two ways. One is sqlazurelabs.com. And the first one is when you go and if you get your token, you could get 30-day token. When you sign in on your Windows Azure, the first site is beta. You can click on beta list and you see which beta programs are available and you can sign up there. So just basically quickly to show you. So if I go to my home, you see beta programs and you can here you will get the list of all the beta programs that are available and you can sign up to your beta programs. Okay, now let's see what our virtual network is doing. So I want to show you that one at the end. My service? Okay, so you see, Traffic Manager found its degraded service. One is offline. So now if I go to my this one. Okay, this is the cache that I have in my browser here. So I got now to the second instance because Traffic Manager gave me the second URL. So with that, I'm 3 minutes over my time. I would thank you very much for your patience. Thank you. Upload them. Yeah, we will. I will give it to my colleagues in Microsoft to put it on the website. Yeah, sure. Nothing. No. When I said environment, I said environment of where you actually you're thinking the last slide I was talking about. Are you referring to that or something else so that we're clear?
Let's say you're creating Azure SQL and I have 1 terabyte warehouse.
Doesn't affect you. No, it doesn't affect you because first of all, for SQL Azure, all the updates don't affect the current functionality or service. This is clear and it's going to be clear. So you don't lose anything, nothing changes. The other update that people usually are worried about is the upgrade of the guest operating system of your roles that are running. And I know if, somebody explained how that works. Basically, we upgrade operating system when, I don't know, new .NET framework comes, we put something else on top of the operating system, and you can have two options. We will support all the operating systems from the back, and in your configuration, you can say automatically update. So when we roll out the new operating system, we take your application, we put it on the new operating system. Or you can say wait, you know, and you test it out first, and then you deploy on the new operating system with a button, and we do the deployment.
Is there any option to freeze my Azure environment?
Yeah. You just say, I don't want to upgrade, and then if you want to run it on I don't know, what was the first 1.1 version of operating system, it's going to run there. We support it. They're just a virtual machine that we deploy for us. So we have a set of them, we're going to deploy that one with your application. That's not a problem. That would,
Because our company has a lot of affiliates in Africa, in Nigeria.
Yeah.
And we're thinking about moving to cloud, but it stops us.
The thing is that, first, I don't have access to that information. That's really like a strict information on how we build databases. That's a set of Microsoft that's called Global Foundation Services. GlobalFoundationServices.com is their website, so a separate part that does the planning. And they decide where they need the service and what is the latency and if they need another data service somewhere. So I actually don't know if you're planning one. I'm sorry. But if there is a, what we usually do is if there is a specific market, and if you're going to be in South Africa, I can, you can contact my colleague through me if needed. If there's a specific scenario that you actually see that there's the service is not available with proper latency, we collect the data and we can give it to the Global Foundation Services guys to, so that they know, okay, this might be area of the world that we have to cover. Africa hasn't launched yet Windows Azure at all. The only we call that region Middle East and Africa altogether, and it's only one country currently has it, and it's Israel for this moment. The other countries don't have it officially, so it's in the same basket as Ukraine. You also don't have it officially yet. So it's going to launch hopefully soon, but currently it's not even available, so we don't support it on those markets yet. So. Yes. What you actually can do is how it works. You can set up first. If you have System Center, you will be able to configure management pack that will actually monitor what goes in the cloud. And how you do the management is you enable diagnostics inside of your role. You can configure that. Okay, I want to see what's going on with this application, and I want to measure all of these. Counters. I don't know, maybe you want to see some counters from IIS, some counters from CPU, disk, whatever you want. And then when you configure that, it collects all the data and it stores it on Windows Center storage in an interval that you specify, every 30 seconds or whatever. And then with System Center, or some other tool, probably the easiest with System Center, you see all the data and you see what's going on. This is the way how you manage it. You can collect all the data. You can actually collect a lot of the data so that you will know. And a colleague here of yours has a lot of experience also with debugging those things. So he can tell you in details how to do it. Because you can also go with IntelliSense debugger, historical debugger, to see where your project failed. You can collect the data, load it up in Visual Studio to see in which step of execution your project failed. It is possible, but I'm not going to say that it's the easiest way to start with on Windows Azure. Probably agree, right?
Yes, and let's produce an additional,
overhead. Yes, overhead for your application. Yeah.
For your
yeah. So you don't do that in production usually in that way. You do the in a testing environment. Then when you're satisfied, you would go in production. Well, it depends how you're going to capture that error in your application, right? Yes. But service will not go down. If it's issue with your SQL query, then this is database or application logic. And if you properly handle it in a proper way, you're going to see what happens. If service goes down, that's our problem. and we will let you know and we fix that. Yeah.
When will you have the remote debugging? This summer?
Remote debugging to
yes, this is really important.
Yeah.
Well,
what you can do now is basically connect to your role and do stuff there, right? You know that. You can administratively connect into your role, and you have then basically your environment there. So if you would like to do debugging, first of all, we believe that what you have as database environment on your computer should simulate Azure in the same manner. So if you debug locally, it should be the same environment in the cloud. If you don't trust us, you could actually deploy a VM role image where you have your Visual Studio Debugger in and your application. You deploy it to the cloud, and you can connect to it from RDP, and then you debug in the cloud. It's not the same, I know, but it's not that easy to go into the cloud. And I'm going to tell you why. Because actually, you don't get a fixed IP if you're a role in our cloud, right? So for Visual Studio to connect to that role, that would be some issue with our networking. It's not that easy to connect. RDP works, we figure that one out. But for Visual Studio to connect directly to that service that runs in a role, that would be a bit tough. And it would be a security risk. We probably, yeah. So I don't know where we're on that one. Because for me to connect to a process in a role somewhere there, that's a security risk if something goes after that, right? I want to have that locked.
Yeah. I think the question, when
will be
able to buy Windows Azure accounts from Ukraine
with my
debit card? I want to buy it, but I couldn't.
I can show you the way. Yeah, I know there is a way. I cannot, soon is the best answer I can say. We're not allowed, honestly, to say that in public when the date is, but soon, it's going to come soon, really soon. I know. We know. Me, my role is actually to push Corp to get us to these countries. This is my everyday, and I get many requests, believe me.
What about the roadmap of table storage? Because it's now very pure functionality.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it will be some new NoSQL solution, or it will be extended, because I cannot find the...
Yes, honestly, I haven't seen anything on table storage because people wanted, you know, some indexing issues were and some stuff. There were requests. I didn't see any roadmap when that there will be an upgrade. Probably they're working on it, but I didn't see that, sorry.
Is there any hosted version of the Azure platform. Yes,
that was an interesting experiment that we went into, and it's called Windows Azure Appliance. So we said we're going to do this and give it to you so you can host it in your data center if you want that. And we picked a couple of companies to actually do that because the problem is the size. So we said, you know, it has to be at least 1,000 servers if you want to get serious, right? So you need bigger companies to do it. And currently there are... eBay is using it, Fujitsu has deployed, so Fujitsu is one of them that is using it, and they're offering their own Windows Azure. So today, if you're a Fujitsu client, you can buy in their data center Windows Azure. And then they stopped the project. They said, okay, let's see how this works out. So it was on the roadmap. We know how to do it, but we're going to see how we can scale that down. So currently, I don't have a date or availability, but it's trying it out. So yeah, it works. Yes. I wish I could give you an answer. There is an answer, and it's coming soon, okay? Really. Honestly, I tried... The thing is, I tried to get permission to share the roadmap with you broadly. We don't have that permission currently. When you launch in Ukraine, it's gonna be a lot of new functionality. So keep tuned, it's going to be soon. A lot of new functionality. No, you will not find any information anywhere. You don't find... soon, when we launch in Ukraine, you will be notified, for sure. Believe me. No. Availability. availability that you will be able to go on the website, put your Ukrainian web card, credit card in or whatever, buy it through any other way of Microsoft licensing and start using it from Ukraine and have support and all the stuff. We don't do that today. So today you have to have data center. Probably we will not plan a data center in Ukraine. Yes? CDN, yeah, that will fix. If CDN we use for CDNs, we put all over the place where we need them, right? But the thing is for content delivery network. So if you want to service a lot of data to your end users, we have 26 nodes around the world that does that. And you know, we have put one in Moscow. We have, you know, depending on where there is enough traffic. In Moscow is one, yes. Yes, for CDN. The thing is that our Global Foundation services actually check that the whole world is covered with the proper latency, so that there's not more than so many milliseconds, seconds, whatever, to our data centers. And they actually look at the expansion of data centers on that way. So Ukrainian market, we believe we can serve with the current infrastructure that we have. We believe we can serve it. Shouldn't feel, yes. Yes, this is how, and we did estimations of the markets. And Russian market, for example, works perfectly. What they needed was content delivery network node, and that made sense. So they put that one. But content delivery network is just for, you know, how do you get a larger data to your to the end customer. So basically, it's kind of cache of your data from Windows Azure you put into the content delivery edge server, and then they can access it there. And if there's going to be need, that's easier to set up. And they're looking into the, you know, adding new edge servers every year. So if there's going to be need for Ukraine, they probably will find some way to put one. I cannot believe it. No, it's time to leave. When you do the CDN, you can configure what is TTL time of the object in the cache. Time to leave. So basically, when you put it in, you say, okay, this content leaves only 60 seconds or 20 minutes. Because you want to optimize also the way of how you do transfer, especially, you know, so that you don't check left, right, and create additional traffic. So when you put it out there, you say, I'm pretty sure this is valid for 1 minute, for example. And then after 1 minute, if I get a request, I get it to cache again. Yes, for management, Azure supports that. So you basically install management certificate on Azure so that you encrypt everything that when you deploy. Let me think. Well, it's your live ID account that could get you in. I don't see any easy way of how you would do that currently. I don't see, you would like to do it programmatically from your application without using certificate. Well, if you authenticate, there probably is an API to authenticate against your live ID. What you need is, you could do it. You could do it with access control service probably. You would need to somehow get that live ID token, and then you can get to the portal, I would say. You know, because every time I go there, I have to write in my live ID token, right? I have to write my username and password, so that I get token, I can get to management portal. So, But yes, I'm thinking about that one because there used, I think it's also some API that we expose. Okay, I have to check that. I have to check that what we have on management from. Have you tried that any time? No, you're playing around with Azure. No, I'll check it. If you my name, I can give you a card later on. You can send me email. I'll check it. Sure, it's beer time, guys. Or another question. Thank you.